Well, we've been ferrying people out of Guam for the last 2 days. Physicists, biologists, mathematicians, you name it. Everybody being flown to the middle of nowhere in the Pacific Ocean.
What's going on?
Oh, they're not telling us anything, sir. What about you? What'd they tell you?
Well, they told me there was a plane crash.
You get called in on crashes?
Oh, I'm on a list of psychologists the FAA brings in when a plane goes down. So where exactly are we now?
See, it's not impossible, it's ridiculous. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. This is episode 287. I'm Scott Johnson, and joining me today, it's Brian. He can't see his reflection in his huge balls either, Dunaway.
Hey, guys.
Hey, man.
Listen, I'm getting a little worried. After watching our movie this week, physical manifestations of my fears have started to develop. First, it was no biggie. As recording this episode gets closer, the worse things have gotten. Oh, no. Here it comes again. I'm thinking about this movie this week. Uh-huh. No. No. Well, there it is. I just manifested a turd thinking about this movie. Hopefully that's the worst of it.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. No. No.
That's it. Wow, he really left us hanging there. That was like what do they call those?
A hanger. Hanger owner.
Yeah.
Cliffhanger.
Gotta wipe a lot to get that thing off.
Yeah, a Klingon.
A dangler.
All right, nicely done. Also with us, Randy, this movie has Sabretooth, Nick Cage, and Mumbles. Oh, Jordan.
Holy cow. It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Randy.
Did I ever tell you guys about the time I had a job taking really exciting novels and turning them into boring movies?
No,
yeah. I was responsible for punching down the Da Vinci Code, that Cat in the Hat thing, something called Aragon. I didn't even read it. But anyway, you know who were the best authors I ruined for the big screen? John Grisham and Michael Crichton. If only they'd given me the original Jurassic Park to work with, I could have made that movie more boring than going to church on a Monday. Just give me a chance, Spielberg.
Ew, Monday church, that sounds terrible. That sounds real bad. Finally with us, Brian, more like Queen Lestingfa Abbott.
Oh, it also has a Catwoman's enemy in it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, computer sounds right here. Hello, how are you? I am fine. My name is Jerry. What's the deal with spheres? Did you ever notice that spheres make your head look big? It's like, hey, I'm Mr. Big Head. And what's the deal with airplane food? Smokehouse peanuts? Where is an airplane keeping the smokehouse? I'll be here all week.
Well done. A Seinfeld reference. That is amazing. I'm super impressed. The movie is Sphere, everybody. That's what we're talking about today. The Barry Levinson sci-fi epic based on the Michael Crichton novel. Let me first say that I am a huge Barry Levinson fan. One of my favorite movies of all time is Avalon, 1990. Fantastic film, worth seeing if you haven't. Really, really good. He's done some other great work, including Wag the Dog, which came out right after this. In fact, was filmed back-to-back with this.
I think he was actually not even looking at Sphere during this time. He was paying all his attention to Wag the Dog. Right.
I'll be off in the corner here working on Wag the Dog. You guys just keep filming. It's fine.
And he's known for a couple of real bombs. Like, he's known for... This thing made no money. And he... what was the other one that was just...
Tin Man? Was it...
Toys is what I'm thinking of.
That was his too? Yeah. Oh, I love Toys.
Oh, that's a real pooper, man.
You know,
it's
I remember
pooper of a movie, but it's visually so cool. And it's got... new Thomas Dolby music in it, which for some reason is enough of a draw for me to really like it.
He got it, but every time with new Thomas Dolby
and
music.
You've got LL Cool J. The ladies love Cool James.
Oh, he's in that? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So he went from Latifah straight to Cool J? They kind of, no kidding. And they kind of occupy the same rap space as far as I'm concerned, those two.
I am going to need to have a rap star in every one of my films. Get
Get Cool J on the phone.
Yeah.
Get me Liev Schreiber.
Yeah.
Get me Snow. Is Snow still a person? Get me Snow.
Get me Liev Schreiber before his jaw became weird. He's in this. He's super young in this and super annoying in this. Holy crap, he's annoying.
So you said Mumbles. Which one was Mumbles? Because they all mumbled to me.
Dustin Hoffman. Oh, I get it.
Now, there's an actual... So there's an actual character who...
Dick Tracy stuff.
Yeah, Dick Tracy. So Dustin Hoffman played Mumbles in Dick Tracy. He also mumbled...
And he continued that role here in Sphere.
You're not wrong. He mumbles a lot, man. It's almost inaudible at some points of the movie.
I have a theory. I had to crank everything up to 100% on my audio system to try to even get an idea of what they were saying.
It's pretty weird.
So there's a problem, by the way. I'm sure that this port, we don't call it a port, this transfer of this film for Netflix is is not right. I'm sure.
You think it's the transfer?
If it's not the transfer, somewhere in some place the levels are wrong. I don't know where they're wrong, if it was before the transfer or not, but they're
right. Wrong. Even if it's, you could say, oh, well, it's Dustin Hoffman. He mumbles. There's still an editor somewhere that needs to adjust for that when they're doing the final pressing.
I am sure that I saw this movie at the theater. And by the way, when I decided, oh, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put on my Audio Technica headphones and turn this thing up and hurt my hearing. It sounded pretty good. So I'm sure that it didn't sound as bad. I was just watching it on my television last night. I was just rewatching because, you know, I do that. And it sounds horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, it's weird. It's real uneven that way. I don't know what the deal is and why they can't get that. I don't know why that can't be consistent. I don't even know if that is Netflix doing this. Maybe these come to them like this and they're not going to go do a bunch of audio.
I think people like me are also at fault because I'm the one who will yell at some poor intern working at Netflix to not put a compression filter on the sound for every damn thing. And this is a case where I kind of felt like it needed it.
Well, I wasn't sure if it was the editing or if it was the actual transfer because I didn't, there was a lot of visual editing as well that where they were like, they were doing zooms in the editing room, you know, instead of doing it with the camera, it's like, we're going to zoom in.
Yeah. And those are different because with the lenses, you get like foreground, background kind of stuff going on. In this, it felt like you were zooming into a slide.
While we pan and scan across this.
It's like what they did in the movie, Limitless.
Yes.
Whenever he took the drug, that whole zoom, digital zoom, not lens zoom.
Yeah, it was disconcerting and took me out of the movie when they would do that. It was very odd choices
There, I feel like we kind of get to blame Adam Greenberg, the cinematographer, for it's admittedly hard to make a movie that takes place in close quarters, right? That's very difficult.
Sure.
But that's why you get a cinematographer like Adam Greenberg and say, you got to come up with some tricks to make sure that, you know, when you're, you know, capturing sound, that those mics are out of the way and everything. And I just felt like it was mailed in. Like these close quarter shots with camera, it felt like, oh, let's just tip the camera off the table it's sitting on and see what happens. Okay, we're going to keep that, but we're going to cut real hard through the middle of it. Like it's all over the place. And again, a high level of difficulty, but they didn't even try.
Well, so all of that being said, and plenty more to say, which we'll say in this episode about Sphere, I don't think after watching this, and I only watched it once, Ibbot watched it like 2 weeks ago thinking we were going to see it sooner and then we had a missed week. And so he watched half of it again just to kind of get, you know, saucy with it. And Randy watches things like 5 times every time anyway, but I only watched it the one time here and then saw it once in the theater. And I will say, I don't think it's nearly as bad as everybody thinks it is. And I don't mean us as everybody. I mean everybody in the world. It seems to think Sphere is a real hot piece of garbage. It's got a Metascore of 35 on Rotten Tomato or on IMDb, a collective score of 6.0. Like, I don't think it's nearly as bad as people think. It's no Congo if we're talking about Crichton.
Oh, right.
Or what's the other one? Time?
Well,
at least Congo had a giant monkey, white monkeys scene. At least that was entertaining.
And lava tubes. Do you think the people who are most vocal about not liking it, did you read the book, Scott?
I have not. I hear the book is amazing. And so
I'm wondering if that's the Great Wall, right? Like if people who've read the book and see the movie are more disappointed in just the way the story is told and the ending.
Yeah, that's true.
Particularly the ending.
And I don't know how the ending goes in the book because, again, I haven't read it. And I think I'm going to read it. Like, everybody on Twitter last night, I'm like, I don't think it's as bad as everyone says. And every response was, well, that's because you haven't read the book. And
oh, wow.
It does bring up, we could have that whole argument about whether a piece of entertainment or media can be appreciated separately in two mediums. Can it be, you know, can we, for example, with the Marvel movies, can we appreciate the comic books and the movies? Well, I think we can. Can we appreciate a beloved book and a movie? That seems like a harder sell if the movie strays too far, you know?
We've got to talk about it because this is the only time we're ever going to talk about it. So I'm sorry if you're in the middle of reading the book right now. Well, maybe pause the podcast for 14 hours and finish the thing.
Scott just said he was about to read it. Are you really going to spoil the book ending for us?
I don't think we need to spoil the book. Man, Randy is wanting to spoil everything this week. It's like, hey, wait till we get on. We're going to talk about the Civil War. I'm like, I haven't seen it yet. Wait a second. You're going to read a book. Let me spoil it for you.
Well, wait. Right, so here's my stance on spoilers. Has everybody else read the book?
I've read the book.
Okay.
I read the book literally. Like, I had finished the book 2 weeks before this movie came out at the theater because in anticipation of going to see the movie. And my impressions at that time was, wow, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But my second viewing, being so far away from reading the book, was like, wow, the translation of how a book functions, because it makes you use your imagination as opposed to a movie, which can let you use your imagination, but generally shows you what you need to see. That disconnect really, this is a great story for a book. To me, it's not a great story for film.
So I guess what I'm saying is I am okay. As long as everyone else has read it, I'm not a huge stickler for spoilers. And so I don't care.
For me, it's just one tiny change, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
I think it's a pretty substantial change.
It's a substantial change, but it's not like it changes, you know, the thing still pops out of the ocean and disappears. They still leave the thing with their powers intact, but there's, you know, and they still talk about agreeing to forget they had the powers, to like use their powers to forget they had the power.
Okay. But the book, because in a book you can describe what a person thinking. The book ends with, and I'm going to try to do this as spoiler free as possible. The book ends with a mystery, a lingering question that you have to have. And that is, did this agreement that everyone reached, did everyone stick to it?
Right.
Well, I got the impression that they left that hanging in the movie, didn't they? When I got done with this viewing, I went, oh, well, I don't know if what it seems like not all on the same page here.
A movie takes 20 hours of text, right, and turns it into an hour and a half of visuals. Yeah. So a lot of stuff that builds up to that is just totally missing. Like these discussions between people that help explain what they're doing at the end, what their motivations are when, you know, the survivors get to the end of this thing. It's all missing from the movie. And so the movie just feels so flimsy at the end, whereas the book is like this big climax, and you come away and you're like, oh man, I have no idea what to think. Whereas the movie has to tell you exactly what to think, because that's all it's got.
Could the movie though pull off the whole, and we've seen it so many times in crappy movies, where right before the credits roll, one character, in this case, it would be the one character who we're questioning whether or not they kept their agreement, slyly looks at the camera and smiles kind of thing. I mean, it wouldn't be exactly that. But it would be,
yes. That would be way too subtle for Barry Levinson. And that's why I want to come back around. Barry Levinson makes movies like Good Morning Vietnam. They smash you in the mouth, and it's great. I love his movies, but he was the wrong person for this, in my opinion. This should have been maybe someone like Spielberg, who could have, you know, and I see why it wouldn't be, because it wasn't a big enough franchise. It wasn't a broad enough story. Yeah, it didn't have anything outside
of... Yeah, and he'd already gotten his Crichton business like 4 years earlier, so it's not like he was on the hunt.
To me, that this at this
Can
point...
Can I sell action figures with this? No. Okay, I'm not in.
Forget about it.
You know, dear, the late 90s Spielberg would have screwed this up royally. Now, if this was in, you know, late 70s, mid 80s Spielberg, it would have been fantastic. But late 90s Spielberg, no.
Well, hold on. What was Spielberg? Late 90s Spielberg was making masterpieces like Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan.
He was screwing up the sci-fi scene, but the other stuff he was doing great.
I want to actually go with you on this. I really think this is a rare example of a movie that's too late for its time. You know, some good movies are ahead of their time. This one feels like if it had been made 20 years earlier, it might have been a lot better.
It was. Was it called Solaris?
You know what it reminded me of? Let me tell you what it reminded me of. It reminded me of Interstellar in some weird ways. And what I mean by that is it's this, you know what? It's like Sunshine. It's like Interstellar. It's like Aliens. It's like there's that pattern of here we all are. We're a little bit jokey. We're on our little ship here. Off we go to do our thing. We're hanging around some sort of galley eating and chatting. Like, that's always in these movies. And then all hell breaks loose.
You know what, Scott? You just reminded me of the existence of this guy named Scott Fletcher.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
Did he do something this week?
He did.
Before we play Scott Fletcher, we need to fade to black and just have the title card come up, The Fletcher.
Oh, The Fletcher. Yeah.
Did you like that?
I actually kind of liked it.
Out of it every single time.
I kind of liked it. I didn't hate it.
It was so unnecessary.
I thought it was okay by the third one because I kind of started getting what they were going for. But at first, when it showed up, I'm like, "What just happened?"
Yeah. No. Okay.
Well, then after Fletcher, I want you to explain to me what they were going for because I thought it was just like a let's just put a title card up here. I could not see the reason for it.
All right. Well, let's talk about that after this. This is Scott Fletcher explaining the film Sphere.
Sphere, 1,000 feet below the ocean. Navy divers discover a habitat a half a mile long. A crack team of scientists are deployed to the site in deep sea habitats. What they find boggles the mind as they discover a perfect metal sphere. What is the secret behind the sphere? Will they survive the mysterious manifestations? Who f***ing cares? They may never live to find out. Who f***ing cares?
he may have improvised a little there.
He may have had a little coffee.
Gone off script.
I'm looking at IMDb. I don't think it says that.
Yeah, he went off script. All right, so let's talk about those title cards for a second. I actually am going to argue the side of that they added to the movie for me.
I think I know what Barry Levinson was going for with that. This during this time, Sphere was a huge book, and just like just like in modern times where we do kind of these translations of what is good in a comic book to our superhero movies, we were doing to this movie what the primary target was, which was the book readers. And so we're putting these chapter titles.
Yeah, and I don't know that there are more chapters than that in the book, but it is that idea of this part of the movie is very important because it involves this giant squid. So we're going to call this The Monster. And you're supposed to get all excited about it. Now, I'm not going to say it was perfectly executed or best used here or done with a deft hand, but I will say I'm with Dunaway. I know why they're doing it, and I understand it as a device, and it works in lots of things, including comedies and other stuff, where you kind of create this almost like a stage play kind of thing. It's almost curtain closes, and here's the next thing. It's like that, but then I'll side a little bit with Ibbot to say, I don't know that it worked great here or was used that well here, but I know what they were trying to do.
Imagine if it had been an epigraph on every sequence, you know, like a brief quote, maybe taken from a character in the film, maybe taken from that report we keep hearing about that we don't, you know, like it could have been something much more intriguing than what it was.
Or there could have been like Aristotle quotes or, you know, like any of that sort of thing works.
Yeah, anything other than that.
If the title cards took me out of a movie, I can't imagine like reading quotes in the middle of the movie on black screens and saying, I'm engrossed in this movie. I feel like I'm here with the character. Oh, what's this? A penny saved is a penny earned. Great. What the hell?
Well, they would, in theory, have something to do with what you're about to see.
Sure. Do not get into the sphere. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well,
early to bed, early to rise. It wouldn't be like that. but right. I get again
these MRF and snakes off this MRF and plane.
It's a way to bookmark. it's a way to bookend your sequences, your scenes, your not scenes, but your major plot developments. And I'm not opposed to it. I just don't know that it was needed here necessarily. But I kind of like
where it's device. But you're right. I mean, you think about comedies where it is used, or it's used in movies where you need that either break from the action, or, you know, the thing that comes to mind is like when there's a crime caper. I don't know if they did this in Ocean's 11, but it feels like they could have, where they've got the ruse or the long con.
Oh, right.
Or they just put up the time of day between each sequence.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Sometimes, like I said, there's better places for it. But also, here's it just occurred to me what it replaces. Back in the old days, if you had a play going, let's say some Shakespearean deal, and then a scene closes, lights go down, and a voice comes over the thing and goes, "For it is worthy of man to put his finger in his anus," or whatever, right? and then fade to the next thing. it's this weird channel I get on 20,000. But that's my point is like it can be used, and I think it's an ancient thing. I don't think it's a new thing, or it's them even trying to do that. I just think it's badly placed here.
Kind of the Greek chorus kind of thing.
Sure. It's like, and now we see our man move from the blur to blur. There's a certain classical quality to it.
I feel like it's important to stop and remind ourselves that there's a good reason why Michael Crichton books so often make bad movies, why it's so hard to make a good movie out of a Michael Crichton book. Yet Michael Crichton books were revered, loved. You couldn't walk through an airport without seeing three of them for 20 years straight. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because Michael Crichton was an odd guy who would go investigate topics to the nth degree while writing a book, and he'd become an expert on things that you wouldn't think an author would. Like for Airframe, he learned all about unions and the history of unions, and then also learned about how airliners are made and how they fly and what they do, and put it together in a thriller, right? Mm-hmm. So that's that can make for a great book, but when you go to a movie, all that learning is useless. You're not gonna teach me in an hour and a half, you know, like with Congo. You're not gonna teach me about sign language and language in general in an hour and a half. So all of that just gets discarded right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. For Sphere, he studied and regurgitates a ton about psychology and about ocean depth biology and all of these things. Great in a book. Totally discarded for the movie.
Well, and it's not like he's all hands on deck either. I'll tell you what I did learn in Congo about.
Lava tubes.
That's what I learned about.
But do you see what I'm saying? Like, there's a level of difficulty here that has to be acknowledged. This might not actually be a very good story when you strip away what Crichton was good at. Mm.
Well, okay, can I ask you a question about the book that isn't spoilery at all? But it was Dustin Hoffman, this sort of nebbish, quiet, mumbly, what the hell am I doing down here kind of guy? Because it seemed like if you're going to take anybody on this trip down to this ocean floor, 1,000 feet below the surface, you'd be through all sorts of rigorous training. You don't just show up and no one told you what you were there for, and then suddenly you're in a submersible and now you're down there. Like, that just, none of that's rung true to me. Like, right. All of it said to me, yeah, this would never happen. While I appreciate Peter Coyote, he is not... You know, none of this is going to happen.
There's no way Peter Coyote's character entrusts this incredible, massive historical find to some people who just found out they're going to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, on their way down. Like, right. I'm here for the plane crash. We're not going to tell you till the very last second that there's no plane crash.
By the way, put on this bathysphere. Yeah.
They tried to explain it by having the main character be a bit of a liar, you know, like who put together this report and overblew his, you know, his credentials and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that didn't work for me because the way they explained it was by having him do a series of confessions to the various people. And you know what? One of these people is going to raise a red flag before committing to going to the bottom of the ocean. One of them is going to turn around and go, okay, game's over. Yeah, sorry.
Not going.
We just found out this is all based on a lie.
And there's huge training involved with that sort of stuff. You don't just go down there and but your normal work a day is sitting in an office asking someone to tell you what your dad was like when you were growing up. Like, it doesn't work that way. So that stuff just really, I mean, I understand that, oh, we got a brilliant psychologist. And but then, okay, but why a psychologist? They never really explained to me why they even needed him. They didn't know it was a sphere that could say its name was Jerry and talk to him until they got down there. So what was what was he for? It's like,
again, he explains it. The character explains it by saying that he was commissioned by the Bush administration to write this report, and everything that's going on is just following his bullshit report. Okay. But the book explains that a lot better when you realize that once you're in sort of the zone of the sphere, once they all get to the boat, basically, the sphere is already working on them. And there's already starting to be some things that are like their actions are fait accompli because the sphere is making that happen for them, you know? Yeah. So in the book, you get this slow burn. You slowly come to realize, oh, I was earlier wondering why in the world did they go down here? Oh, it's because of the power of suggestion, because this character said they should, and the sphere made it happen. That you can get that out of a book. The movie never actually
did the Jerry business in the movie, like, I'm Jerry and you should stay here and whatever, all that stuff. Is that just in their heads that's happening? I guess I don't know when the break happened.
That's manifestation of Samuel Jackson's character's dream. Yeah. So yes, it is happening as far as what
they're not imagining it. Right.
No.
Okay. Right. Okay.
But the movie didn't do enough with that. The movie had an opportunity to make you question every little thing and have them project things, you know, and then teach you, oh, this is, you know, I can't trust what I'm actually seeing or hearing. And the book does that really eloquently because it's a book and you understand what people are thinking. The movie doesn't. And so the movie is just confusing, right?
Yeah, I think they just turned it into a space madness story.
Exactly what it was. It was.
It reminded me of. It reminded me of Event Horizon several times.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. That same idea.
It's funny also.
Go ahead.
I was going to say funny also seeing this movie right after seeing Contact, when I feel like it's
right.
You know, almost the negative print of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I would agree. I have a few times.
Universal language. Right. Come on.
but you're right. In the middle of this movie, I kind of went, oh, this is a weird back to back with Contact because I'm having like deja vu and stuff with some of this. But like,
both
okay,
movies,
I'm going to give.
Movies worried that it's a Trojan horse.
That's
I
true.
That.
They're also from the same era. Like a lot of the stuff feels cut from the same 90s exploratory science fiction cloth to me. But one part I liked a lot, actually. I don't hate the movie as much as everybody else. But there's a part of the movie I kind of thought was pretty good, and I usually hate these sequences. But the deconstruction of the language of the sphere into translatable text.
The keyboard and figuring out that it's wrapped around. And
yeah, I kind of actually buy into all that as a not 100% realistic thing, but as a fun way to mess with the tech. And have it seem somewhat reasonable. It takes time to translate the numbers. They got to wait for the text to show up. They got to ask a question, then it'll come. Like, even the interfaces and him running command line stuff and all that, that all just rang better than just some screen with a bunch of zoomed in bullshit that usually you get in movies. And yeah. I guess I appreciated that more than I thought.
Well, and did you get pretty quickly, like it was a rotated cipher? Did you get that Samuel L. Jackson's character was projecting that?
No, and like, that's the. I guess I just never knew when anyone was doing anything. Like I never knew when anybody. I never knew when anything was fake or real because, I mean, was it fake when he saw the snakes in this room floating around with him and he was screaming like a lady, or was it?
There was a physical manifestation right. of that is what we're thinking because everyone could see it, so it was you know.
Okay.
He feared them into existence, basically.
They had talked about it earlier that your knowledge of what you're manifesting may not be accurate to what it would be in the real world. Like Queen Latifah got killed by those jellyfish, but when Sharon Stone crossed her legs and did the autopsy, she realized that you know it wasn't anatomically correct.
Yeah.
So it was the impression of what they thought it should be.
So the imaginations or the fears of these people
right,
were coming. That's the part that wasn't clear to me, but they were actually creating physical entities based on their fears. Mm-hmm. So if they were afraid of his, okay, so now something's starting to make sense to me. When they're on the ocean floor and they're trying to huck back to the machine there, and you got Peter Coyote and they're yelling, and there's a giant squid on the radar, and all those eggs are falling. Mm-hmm. Is that just a huge manifestation of
Sharon Stone?
Sharon Stone, is it her fear or his fear? Because he hates the jellyfish.
Right, but the sphere is just interpreting all of their subconscious fears, right? So it's not like Sharon Stone is projecting exactly what Dustin Hoffman's seeing, right?
See, that's tricky.
It's not like that.
That's really tricky territory, because what if your fear is that you're
mass hallucination, or is it physical manifestation? Because did any of those things actually kill anybody? They did with Queen Latifah because
when they popped open,
right.
And the other girl, the ragdoll girl,
right?
That was all mushed up. That was gross and cool at the same time. but see, this is where I start to fall apart on the whole thing. Because if I start to believe that that's the case, well, what if Dustin Hoffman's fear is that his wiener will fall out in the middle of lunch? Well, is his wiener going to fall out? And is there it is? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are a lot more fears than just I hate snakes and giant squids.
Right. Right. And but see, he had not actually. The sphere was trying to get everybody to enter into the sphere. Once you entered into the sphere, then you could start truly projecting and you would have the power, apparently. But he never got into the sphere. He was never drawn in and suckered into the sphere.
Are you sure? Because there was that scene where he would look like he was getting sucked into me, just like the Samuel L. Jackson sucking in.
And that's why the book is such a great mind screw and the movie doesn't have the time to get you there. There's a point in the book where you realize we have been spending so much time worrying about people going to and entering the sphere, and we've yet to realize that everyone has and everyone could, and anyone could have projected anything else into and out of that sphere. Like, there's a point where it all sort of multiplies on itself, and that never happens in the movie because you just don't have the time. You just can't.
It's interesting
that at the end where they say, are we in the sphere right now? Like, did he already go in the sphere and we just don't remember it? Kind of
right.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where the book succeeds, because it allows you to breathe and have those questions and be introspective about it, where the movie is just happening so fast. There's no really any time to really contemplate. And you just end up feeling frustrated. Like, I don't know what's going on.
I kept saying the first 30 minutes of this movie, slow down. Oh my gosh. We're in a helicopter with Huey Lewis. And I felt like that was the exact right length of scene. And then after that, everything was rushed so fast. Like, give me some exposition here. Tell me some backstory. Like, oh, man, now we're on the bottom of the ocean. How did we get here so fast?
Yeah.
Yes. Felt the same way.
It's a weird thing. It's a hard thing. And so part of me wants to say, oh, man, thanks for at least trying, Barry Levinson and everyone else who was involved. But then part of me wants to say, but just in the hands of, I don't know, some, I can't think of who would have done this better today. Mm-hmm. Even
at the time. Yeah. I mean, today, like David Fincher or,
Fincher, dude, that's a great pick.
Yeah. You need somebody who could just make it dark and make it.
Cause if you think about it, Fincher with Gone Girl, which I've actually not seen, but I know enough about it to kind of know what he pulled off there. and I know that's based on a book too, but Gone Girl plays with the same kind of psychological messaging. It's the same sort of like, wait, did he or didn't he, or are they or aren't they, or like that playing with that I don't know who to trust here kind of thing, or who to believe, or even what I'm seeing is real. Like, he'd do great at this.
Mm-hmm. So this is way too easy, but just imagine Christopher Nolan making this movie.
Oh yeah, that's another good one.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh,
like inceptionizing it basically, like
with a Hans Zimmer score. I didn't love the score of this movie.
I thought it was all right. I liked it. I mean, it was a little standard, but it was, you know, it was Latin.
Even seeing it 1.5 times, it was so non-intrusive that I don't remember it. I don't
really
remember the score at all. Yeah,
I thought it was just the opposite. I felt like they were constantly going, all right, we don't have time to tell you a story or visually show anything, so we're just going to heighten the tense, you know, make it very tensey with our whole band. Here it comes.
Yeah, I didn't. I came around on that and thought it was okay. I didn't hate it. It was all right. It wasn't the worst thing ever. But anyway, let's do some quick trivia here. Samuel L. Jackson, He would work on the film during the week, and then on the weekends, he was hanging out with Quentin Tarantino making Jackie Brown.
What?
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's how he split his time, because he really wanted to do both. And this is back when he was like, you know, just starting to be Samuel L. Mother
like
Jackson.
Everybody wants Samuel L. Jackson in their movies. So he's got to double up.
I'll do
and
both.
That has now gone on for 20 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Samuel L. Jackson has been in like 14 movies a year for as every year he's wanted to.
Yeah. If we if we focused on nothing but 95 and forward movies, if that's all Film Sack ever covered, I'll bet he'd be our number one actor in most of the things we see, because he's in so many things. We saw him in RoboCop, and he's certainly in all those Tarantino movies, and you can find him in everything, really.
And you know what, Brian Ebbett? Samuel L. Jackson wasn't in Civil War. I just realized.
I thought he was, right. No?
Yeah, no. No, Nick Fury's been...
Oh, my gosh.
Because of the events in Winter Soldier.
No.
He's been off the grid since...
He was in Age of Ultron.
He was in Age of Ultron?
Was he?
Mm-hmm.
Hold on a minute. Oh yeah, he was. Mm-hmm. Totally was. Mm-hmm. You're right, he was. Well then, but he's still. But it's low profile. Like he's still.
Oh
like,
right. He's still in hiding. Yeah. Right.
I just want to read you a list of the movies that Samuel L. Jackson is currently making.
All right.
Because I just love this.
Is it long?
Okay. Avengers: Infinity War Part 1.
Yeah.
Blazing Samurai. Kong: Skull Island. Triple X: The Return of Xander Cage.
Yes.
Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Oh, I want to see that.
The Legend of Tarzan, The Hitman's Bodyguard, a TV movie called Moose, and I swear to God, the remake of The Blob.
I'm in.
Oh really? The third remake of The Blob.
I'm in every movie you mentioned I want to watch. Like, he's a lucky man. He is in all things. Yeah. Everybody wants
all things we want to see. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's kind of a weirdo hoot. He's just a hoot. Mm-hmm. Like, I just love that guy. And he was great in this, looking very young, very smooth, very convincing. yeah, but knows what I'm talking about. Yes. He knows the reference.
Smooth, convincing, like a black man.
Like a black man. But he's super, super cool in this. And he did succeed in this movie of really creeping me out. I don't know that I love his character in terms of, I don't know, he's just kind of a dick, the character. But his portrayal of that character, I don't know. He was the most compelling thing for me in the movie, as far as actors go. Sharon Stone, I think, totally phoned it in. It did not seem convincing at all. Dustin Hoffman was doing Dustin Hoffman, but I think he's miscast. Mm-hmm. He's just the wrong guy. He's an amazing actor and was in Barry Levinson's incredible Rain Man film.
But for some reason, he's Woody Allen in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just this totally nebbish. Wrong for the character.
Nebbish. Yeah. Yeah, it's just not right. It's the wrong fit. And you can't be all actiony later. It just bugs me. But he's, you know, but I love him as an actor. I don't want this to besmirch his
I think
thing.
I would have preferred Liev Schreiber in the main role instead of Dr. Ian Goldblum freaking the fly kind of thing he was doing. Like it just didn't work. Like I also didn't love Sharon Stone in her role. I love Sharon Stone. Mm. I was excited the minute I saw her. Oh, great. She's in this movie. Mm-hmm. But then the entire movie, she didn't feel at all like, I don't know. She felt like G.I. Jane to me in this movie.
You know, yeah? Reading the reviews on this film, almost everybody has one actor they think that nailed the performance, but it's never the same person. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. I think Samuel really? Jackson nailed the performance in this movie. But I've seen other people say, oh, Dustin Hoffman nailed it. And other people are saying, oh, Sharon Stone just nailed it. What do you guys think? Is it who do you think?
I'm going to be the only one who says this, but I really like Liev Schreiber in this.
Oh, I did too.
No, he annoyed the hell out of me. I didn't like him in it.
You do no wrong for me.
He annoyed me. I like him in most everything, but I really didn't like him in this.
He's a great Ray Donovan.
I like him. Did you ever see the remake of The Manchurian Candidate? He was great in that. Holy crap.
Yeah, I saw it last night. No, I'm just kidding.
But I also think it's interesting that in this movie, this is okay. I have no way to prove this, and I meant to actually pass this through Ibbit to see, or by Ibbit, not through you.
You get a lot of great stuff when you pass it through Ibbit.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to see if you could confirm or deny this because you have connections to music that none of us do. But Barry Levinson apparently toyed with the idea of having Queen Latifah and Huey Lewis, who was in the first scene, record a duet at the end of the credits.
Oh my God.
That can't be true.
I read that too, and I've got to call BS on that. I can't.
Can't imagine it.
No. Do you believe in Spear?
And then she go, I do believe in Spear. I just can't imagine it. But we forgot to mention that. Yes, Huey Lewis is
Lewis, helicopter pilot Huey Lewis.
Yeah, it's pretty great. There was no news with him.
He was fine. I just realized that at this time, Huey Lewis and Glenn Frey in bit roles on things are indistinguishable. They are the same person.
Yeah.
In movies and TV shows. And
I like him though. In him. When he does stuff, I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Back to the Future, but you know, just the understated roles. I think Chris Isaac is another one too. That when mm-hmm. you see him, you know, he doesn't take you out of the film like. Why is the only example I can think of is Elvis Costello in Spice World? That's not a great example.
Harry, I feel that way about Harry Connick Jr. Sometimes he throws me off when I see him. Yeah, he's good. He's actually pretty good, but I only think of him as a singer, so it always bugs me.
You know what? You're right, because Chris Isaac, he blends in enough with the other actors that it's not like a stark thing like it is with Harry Connick Jr. I'll give you that.
Yeah. And Chris Isaac, just from my own memory, that's the I fall in love with you. That guy, black and white guy.
Yeah, that guy. Right.
Okay. Can we go here and talk about the worst performances by some singer in a movie?
Okay.
Trying to act.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm trying Anybody to
think. Anybody have any? Because I'm going to hurt some feelings.
I've got one. I already have one.
David Bowie in Labyrinth? Don't say it.
No, that was good. I've got one for you. It's Tom Petty in The Postman.
Yes, good one.
Really bad.
Oh, wow. I still haven't seen it, so I can't speak to that.
He really does feel like you have left the movie and you're watching some like jokey thing that some people made.
It's super bad. So stupid. Yeah. And I love Tom Petty, but man.
And then you go back to the movie.
Mick Jagger and Free Jack?
Yeah.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah.
Ooh,
that is a good Nailed thing. It. That's a terrible
That's
thing.
A good one. He's horrible. Yeah.
Free Jack.
What's the one? What's the one you were going to say, Randy?
Cherry Moon. Under the Cherry Moon.
Wait. Oh, wow.
Too soon.
I'm what? Sorry.
I don't know if I've seen as many times as I've seen Purple Rain. I don't know if I've ever seen Under the Cherry Moon.
I don't think I have either.
I love that album too.
Forgot it existed, to be honest. I totally forgot that was a movie.
Was it black and white, or am I just thinking of?
It's black and white. Yeah, it's black. Yeah.
It's purple and white. It's all purple and white.
I don't intend to hurt feelings. It's just one of those things where Prince shouldn't have like directed the movie. Yeah. He shouldn't have been the star of the movie. Like it was just a big cluster.
You know, I think the most successful used to be a singer is now an actor. I would probably say, now I can't think of his name. He's the old grizzly dude Henry who was, Rollins. Huh? Who'd you say?
Henry Rollins.
Oh no, now I'm going down that path. Shit. No, it's,
Henry Rollins. I love when he shows up.
Who did Convoy? What was his name?
Oh, Christopherson?
Chris Christopherson is a great transition. Yes. He's one of those guys where you think of him as an actor, but he was really a musician before all that stuff.
All right, I'm glad we turned this around, because this is a much better topic. Okay, we have Justin Timberlake.
He's great.
He's a good actor.
Pretty good.
It's good, I think, yeah.
I'm sorry to say, we can't even make this, we have to rule out Will Smith from this topic.
Oh, right? Do we?
Will Smith is so far and away better than all musicians turned actors, right?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He's pretty good. Hold on a second. I don't know about far and away. Hold on a second.
How do we feel about Mark Wahlberg, Marky Mark?
Depends on when you ask me.
He's such a crappy musician. Acting. You can't really call him a musician turned actor.
Of course I can.
You can call him a crappy musician turned actor.
One like song on Billboard one week. That I can definitely call him a musician.
Okay.
And then the next week he was in his bear on a billboard.
Right. That's right.
All right, we can say Jennifer Lopez then.
Okay, she's all right. Jennifer Lopez is all right. She was in good. You know that Made in Manhattan movie? I actually like that rom-com. It's good.
Right. I thought she was good in Selena, but that's not exactly a stretch.
What about the one? Where's the one where she's in a what's the one where she's in a box all the time? What's that one?
No, I'm serious. Oh yeah, yeah.
They hate Meatloaf and everything. Cell, yeah.
The box, right?
You hate everything Meatloaf is in?
Every time Meatloaf appears on screen, I'm like, nope.
Really? Nope.
Oh, man.
Oh, come on. Did you ever see that Steve Martin leap of faith?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. This is my main beef with Meatloaf, if you will. I hate I hate the name Meatloaf. I mean, if he called himself anything else, I'm telling you, from the get-go, it's like you first know? Impressions. First impressions, it's like, hey, who's this singing Meatloaf? Oh, I already hate him.
Okay, already Marvin A Day. There you go. Okay, call him Marvin A Day.
He changed his name in like the 60s, and my problem is he made it two names. If it had just been one name, Meatloaf, I'd be fine, but his name is Meatloaf.
Right.
That is wrong. That would be like if my name was Randy Deluxe. I mean, that's just wrong. No.
Jordan.
Jordan. Yeah. Randy Jordan. All right. This is listen, all I needed from this show today was you saying, here's my beef with Meatloaf, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was really all I needed.
I feel like there's gotta be some people we're missing. I gotta quickly just pull up
on which topic?
I wonder if there's a list on the internet. Oh yeah, on Madonna. Internet?
I don't know, man. Yeah, Madonna.
Elvis Presley belongs on the worst list.
York.
Madonna's bad.
Ludacris.
I love Ludacris in almost everything he does.
Really?
Once again, first impression is like Ludacris.
Tom Waits is great. I love a good Tom Waits scene when they come up. They'll pop up in things like Book of Eli, and you'll be like, oh, Tom Waits is selling shit at an old burnt out place that sells shit. This is great. Yeah, he's great, dude. I'm trying to think of somebody else, and I can't think of any others. I'm sure there's some giant list.
Yeah, I was on a list, and
Britney Spears
gave me
is bad.
Top 40 through 20, and then I got down to the bottom of the list and said 20 to 1. And it took me to an article about Spider-Man.
All those girls in that Spring Break movie are bad. All the girls in Spring Break.
Oh, Selena Gomez and
it's a bad movie. That is a bad movie. It's dumb. Oh my gosh, that movie's dumb.
But I think we can all agree that Will Smith is like knocked it out of the park. Grand Slam.
I can't think of anybody.
Also, with his range and his ability to be top of the box office, big name in Hollywood, blah blah blah, but also do a big range of everything from action to genuinely well made thrillers to serious dramas. Like but you're totally right about him.
He does accents, and before you go see a Will Smith movie where he's playing an African, you know, doctor in America, you think, this is going to be cringy. This accent is going to be cringy. And then it turns out, no, he actually does it fine.
Totally pulls it off, but I'm going to, Dunaway, you're not wrong. I know you just threw that comment out to say it, but Ice Cube is great. I freaking love him and everything. Mm-hmm. I've heard, by the way,
every film, but he's always does it so well.
The only three movies to get like 90% and higher on Rotten Tomatoes lately have been this new Captain America, Civil War, the cartoon, which the Zootopia. And the new Barbershop movie.
Wow.
A lot of people don't even know that exists, really? But there's a new Barbershop sequel 20 years after they made the last one or whatever, and people love it. And I want to go see it because I liked those movies in the first place, and I just think Ice Cube is incredibly endearing.
Tough guy with a heart.
Yeah. F the police. We're coming straight from the underground is what he would say to that.
That's exactly right.
All right. Let's see. What else? The film, by the way, is the second adaptation of a Michael Crichton adaptation for both Samuel Jackson and Barry Levinson. So Jackson appeared in Jurassic Park in 93, and then Levinson directed Disclosure a year later in 94, which I did not know was a Crichton novel. This is the one where Demi Moore and Michael Douglas, right?
Right. Like, yeah.
And they had really.
He had to learn
computers.
Everything about sexual harassment for that. He studied up on sexual harassment and 3D virtual reality technology.
He was slapping girls in the bum and all kinds of great stuff. Let's see. We got some notes here. I already said that. Let's see. Oh, the autopsy where they're pulling freaking jellyfish legs out of Queen Latifah's nostrils was brutal, dude.
Why were they doing an autopsy? And why was she qualified to do an autopsy? Shouldn't they have just like said, don't touch that?
Well,
just
she's a biochemist.
Biochemist,
right? Which has zip to do with dead bodies. So,
right.
Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe she was the most qualified down there, but
we need to do an autopsy stat.
Yeah.
Why?
I want to know how they built this. Yes. My brain goes to places like, how'd you build the habitat? Like, how did that happen? You're at this,
which is
crushing...
thoroughly explained in the book.
Is
which
it?
Is like, which is like one of the whole points to reading the book is coming to understand the intense chemistry and all of the strange things about human biology when you go to the bottom of the ocean. Like, again, I don't know. Should it? I guess it should have been like a Nat Geo miniseries or something.
That's
I don't know what I was wanting,
and instead it was like, oh, we're down here in the thing people built, and your voice is funny until you put this thing on you, and that's all they spent with that, and that bugged me. And I was sure when you say, now that you say it, it confirms it. But I was sure there was more to that in the book than they showed here.
It's Michael Crichton book.
Yeah. I was impressed to see Samuel L. Jackson can sing pretty well. I don't remember anything else where he can kind of belt it out. He was in that shower singing.
Oh,
that
man, he was in the shower like 50% of this movie.
Sleeping and in the shower. Well, it's because he could put a shower curtain in, and he could go over and be working on Jackie Brown.
Yeah,
They turned him into a teenager. What was going on?
Yeah. Why couldn't he shower and sleep at the same time? We could have really solved some problems there.
Right. Could have gotten a Jackie Brown sequel out of this.
Also, Hoffman looks like a little tiny person all the time. I know he's a short guy, but man, he just everybody was taller than him. So there's that. I also got very claustrophobic at times watching this. Movies about closed spaces, they can get under my skin. Like VR, the thing I'm least excited about with VR, I want all my VR experiences to be big open deserts. I don't want any like, oh no, I'm in a tiny hallway with an alien creep around the corner. Forget it. F that. Not interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So you're not going to play the new VR elevator ride game then? Okay.
No, I am not. Listen, let me tell you something that I can't think of anything that sounds worse to me. Being stuck on an elevator with a bunch of people. I cannot think of a worse thing right now.
I always have. I do pretty good with elevator, but every once in a while, there's always at least one thought in the back of my mind when the elevator starts going up or down. It's always, is it going fast enough? Are we going too slow? When's that door going to open? How do I escape out of here? Who am I going to have to kill to get out of this elevator?
Yeah. Who are we going to eat first? Who has to take a shit in the corner? Like
every time.
I work at in an office building that has haunted elevators, and it's not just me saying that as a joke. Like everyone who works there agrees. Everyone agrees that the elevators are haunted and or busted and are maybe. What? Misprogrammed.
Well, there's a difference
between what do they use to define haunted? Like, oh God, it's taking forever today. It must be haunted.
Yeah, or are they saying there's the spirit of old man McGee who used to clean these halls still resides in the elevator.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. No, it's I get on the elevator and press the number 3, and the number 3 lights up, and then once we get underway, it unlights itself, and a big mystery occurs. Where are we going? What's going to happen? And I
then
press
it all
3.
Goes dark.
Yeah.
And I hear this voice. Yeah.
Like seriously, it's what adds to this is that the telephones in the elevators are connected to the rest of the telephone system.
Yeah.
And so it's possible to call them. Mm-hmm. It's very, very unlikely. But once in a blue moon, someone calls the office and then starts dialing random extensions because that's what people do. Mm. And you're on the elevator. And suddenly the phone rings and it auto answers. And there's a voice that says, hello, hello.
Wow.
And
can I have an Overwatch beta?
When that coincides with the elevator deciding to not do what you agreed to do in terms of take you to a floor and let you out.
Yeah.
That is a terrible experience.
Yeah, no, I imagine. And then the Ouija board says, EA sucks, EA sucks, or whatever. I don't know.
Randy, you telling me you don't know the extension to the elevator? Because I know you know the extension.
I don't know how I would figure it out either, but I'm saying
I want to know.
I hope someone who works with me is going to email FilmSack and confirm the haunted elevators. And if it is you, Mr. Morheim, I hope I am not talking out of school here. Like,
right.
I don't think
he listens. So it's fine. I think it'd be really funny if you called the elevator and people were required to answer like in a company, like, this is Jeff Kaplan and I'm in the elevator. Who's this? Like, I would love that. You guys need
you don't answer because it's so terrifying when it happens. It's so,
that is scary.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
that's
you just
scary.
Stand there, you totally clam up.
I get the whole haunted. Using the word haunted, it makes sense to me, even though none of you think supernatural things are at play here, but obviously that elevator's got issues.
There are two elevators, and they both do this, so you just know they're programmed badly. They have bugs in the programming, is all the real case. But when the elevator just decides to stop between floors, turn off the lights on the buttons, and you just like are standing there, you seriously wonder for a moment whether or not you're going to be there the rest of your life.
Oh my gosh. That's all. That sounds so bad. And are there actually hatches on top we can get out Keanu Reeves style or what? How the hell do we get
out of
there?
Probably not.
Oh, F that. When I'm out to see Blizzard, I'm never going to do that. I'm not going to the elevators. Thanks. You've ruined the elevators. All right, what else here? I like the creative deaths. It felt to me a bit like a horror movie in that way. It's only PG-13, but there were some nice moments. Peter Coyote getting cut in half by a door, hydraulic door. That's pretty rough.
So, yeah, I was curious about that. How accurate was that? I'm sure somebody has to be on some kind of underwater sub or something, and they're like going, that's not how those doors work.
Well, I mean, I don't know about the doors, but like I wondered about the fire hazards they kept describing, just some of the physics of being down there. I wondered how much of that was real. It didn't seem like the suits they were in would protect them from that kind of pressure. Intense pressure. Yeah.
Yeah. And they talked about the pressure too. So, yeah. But it was kind of, there was a little bit of hand waving on exactly how deep they were.
They should have all had the bends is what they should have had though.
Yeah. Well, right. And that's what makes the end of the book so great, is that when they come back up to the surface, they all have to sit in a decompression chamber for 3 days.
Yeah.
And that time is the time when the survivors have to come together, emotionally as a team and figure out what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the movie was like, they're coming down the hall. They're going to come ask us questions. We got to make a decision. No. It's a lot more suspenseful when they have days to figure it out, and what they figure out is not necessarily reliable.
I wonder how many times Liev Schreiber could get his head hit in the movie. That was like insane.
Right. It was like we're gonna start calling him Concussion Man. And he fell down
big
and got
time.
His face grilled.
Yeah, I got it.
Knocked off his glasses that he doesn't need. Or does he need them? I don't know. Does he need them? I don't know.
Nobody knows. Do you want mine? Sure. Have mine. Nope. You don't want them? Okay. Yeah, there was a lot of glasses jokes going on. That was an odd thing. Also, they got two. Like, if I was going down to this super compressed habitat thing, 1,000 feet below the thing, I would not be in the place talking in my helium voice having a good time. I just wouldn't.
Right. And not noticing and acting like you're not even noticing that your voice is helium.
Yeah. Like, it's just.
Like, I hope you have a clip.
I might have some of that. Oh, yeah.
You gotta have.
I especially have her laugh. That was the worst part of it. So I kept that. All right, let's jump to some clips. There are many, and I'm going to play them. Well, not that many. There's a chunk. So for example, here's one that's in the movie. All right, here's a clip, everybody.
I wrote that for the Bush administration, and that's our Bible here, every jot and tittle.
But that was a report about a possible encounter with an alien being.
He's like a low talker on Seinfeld. A puffy shirt. When did I agree to wear the puffy shirt? Anyway, here's that again.
Every jot and tittle.
I just like saying that out loud a lot. Every jot and tittle.
I know what a tittle is, but I don't know what a jot is.
Yeah,
tittle is
either.
The dot above an eye, right?
Yes. Right.
Jot.
Oh, I thought that was the jot, and the tittle was the like cross of the T. I have no idea.
Oh. Well, it's all stupid.
There are a lot of T's and tittle.
Let Sam Jackson enter or end your sentences.
Yeah. Well, so you're saying the spacecraft crashed in the year.
1709.
So you're saying the spacecraft crashed 300 years ago?
Sounds like guy. Scott doing math.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the math guy. She's not, clearly.
I was a little bothered by the 2-year designation of dates. I was like, didn't we learn our lesson in 99?
Oh,
like, right.
Why would we be doing that?
Well, because we didn't. The year was 97 or whatever. So
I hate to keep bringing up Prince, but boy, was he wrong about 1999. We didn't party at all. We all sat around at computers and wondered what was going to happen. There wasn't a single party.
I think there were some parties.
He said, like, refresh. It's 1999. Right?
Yeah, partied right, like exactly. It's 1999. Exactly. He wants us to do that now, even. Like now, right. The song plays. He's not saying look forward to a future date that's not here. He's saying party like it's 1999.
Exactly.
So that means, Randy, sit down at your computer and make sure your dates are okay.
And wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that was so stupid. That millennial bug crap was so freaking dumb. Yeah. Oh, human beings, you're stupid. All right, here's a file I called Nerds.
Harry, that's a joke, right? I mean, you're kidding. This is the greatest scientific discovery since Copernicus. It's bigger than Copernicus. The idea that we're not alone, it'll change everything. We have physical evidence that there's extraterrestrial life. You don't want to see that?
You know that in every other movie Liev Schreiber's in, he's down like this.
Right.
Yes. Right. This so was weird. Him doing freaking Jeff Goldblum, and I don't know why.
Hmm. Yeah, which one did you think was being Woody Allen in this film? Because I'm hearing that now, and I think I might be
apparently everyone. Maybe they're all impersonating Barry Levinson.
That's hilarious. Oh my gosh. When you say Barry Levinson, it makes me want to watch Avalon. If people haven't seen Avalon, go watch it. It's such a great movie. All right, here's Hoffman mumbling big time.
Did you tell Barnes?
You can't do that. That's fraud. Look, they came to me, you know, new administration, like political agenda. They said, look, in case of an alien invasion.
Good Lord.
And I was like 2 inches from my TV at this point.
You're going to have to turn off the TV.
That's right. They were talking about the time. All right, here's Sharon Stone, helium laughing. That's really annoying.
It's also the sound that that you hear in the Blizzard elevators
yeah.
every once in a while.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, the lights are off. Oh, no, it's back. Ah. Oh,
wow. I mean, if you could find the extension, you definitely got to pipe that into it.
Yeah.
My God, yeah, that's great.
Sam Jackson. Go ahead.
I haven't really thought much about punking people in the elevators because it is really, like, bothersome. It's like, you know, you're at a place of business where you work and you know, people do, like, serious talk and... I haven't really thought about it, but it would be the perfect opportunity to punk them.
Oh, it would be. But they'd get like PTSD and never ride the thing again. They take the steps every time. Scary as hell, man. All right, here is Sam Jackson talking science.
I don't know what a black hole is.
A black hole is a collapsed dead star that has so much gravity it acts like a huge vacuum cleaner, sucking everything into it. Light, interstellar dust, time.
Time.
It's possible, but not plausible.
All right, mother effer, he should say at the end of that. That's great.
Understand
I hate
why.
This type of shit.
Why did the script have him say it's possible but not plausible? That's so dumb. Like he's, I don't know.
Yeah,
probable. I would take
or likely. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think, yeah.
But plausible
is what you think it means.
Yeah. Yeah. Go back to your math.
Possible is plausible.
Exactly. Those the same words, aren't they? Plausible. Right, possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are different words.
Well, they're different words, but their meanings are real parallel, man. Aren't they? They're right
like
up there
it's
together.
Something that could happen. Like it's something that is, I don't want to use the word possible, but something that is, that could happen.
Yeah. Or you could say, okay, I know that there's a real tiny difference. It's like, are you going to the movie later? It's possible. Are you going to the movie later? It's plausible. Plausible seems
a likelihood.
Yeah, plausible seems to have a connection to if all other things line up, we'll be there. Where possible just could be anything, right?
Yeah.
So maybe that's the difference.
If I'm not doing a myriad of other things, then I'll be doing that.
But I still say probable is the word he meant to use or should have used. Look at this. I got this old clip. This is Ibbot after his prom date said to take her home.
It's not that old.
Well, it's pretty old. It says, so she really wanted to go home, and Brian replied this way.
No, that's ridiculous. I mean, we haven't even begun to scratch the surface here.
All right, there you go. Take that for what you want. Take that as to mean whatever you'd like. It's fine. Let's talk about a little fart.
We call a tornado is just a little fart.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. By the way, can you not, when you hear Peter Coyote talk, all I hear is Ken Burns documentaries because he's done like the last five, and it's all
that's,
I hear in my
exactly
head.
That's exactly... I, the whole time I was like, oh God, this
oh,
is
no, I keep hearing him from some other movie and I don't know what it is.
Well, he was in E.T. where he was in Keys.
He's Mr. Keys.
Mr. Keys.
Keys, yeah.
But he is so prominent in all of Ken Burns' work now, and I watch so much of that yeah. It's either him or Keith David. That's the switch off between those two right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in most of the more recent ones, and I watch like the Truman one, not Truman. My brain's not working. The one about the two presidents that were related to LBJ and
Adam. Oh,
or not LBJ. It's Lyndon B. Johnson. Frick. I can't
yes,
think.
Frick.
I can't think of their stupid name.
Frick.
Anyway,
not John Adams.
No,
John
the Adams. Okay. Here it comes. Coming out of my head now. I can feel it.
Bush and Obama.
No. shit. He's doing it to me now.
I don't even have to do it.
What's Roosevelt's? Thank you, Scott. Jeez, I had to fart
that
out.
Oh, Roosevelt's.
It's like constipation brain there. The Roosevelt's one, the recent Ken Burns thing, he is, this is all Peter Coyote all the time talking in that thing. And so when I hear him in this movie, it doesn't matter what he says.
We call a tornado is just a little fart.
I expect a nice transition and then somebody reading a letter from the war or
slowly
whatever.
Slowly panning photograph.
Yeah, it's really weird.
I think I'm just thinking of commercials because he's the kind of person who will narrate a commercial for
Big
Chrysler.
Big time. Yeah, he's a He's a great huge
voice. It's great everywhere voice. You want to be.
Yeah. He has a really interesting voice. Here's his other line.
Break out your 5-day deodorant pads.
Okay. He told that to Queen
Latifah. What was that?
He told that to Queen Latifah.
What are 5-day deodorant pads?
I don't know. Is that a...
I'm afraid. I don't want to know because I was afraid. Stick.
Is there, like, can I shove a pad up in my armpit and leave it there for a week?
I'm sure people know what it is, and I'm sure we'll get sent many messages.
It. There's also a deodorant. I just Googled for it, and it tried to have me search for a deodorant paste, which I think is odd. Right.
Oh, yeah. Tussie was great. You know, I don't...
Oh, here we go. 5-day antiperspirant deodorant pads.
What, right. You stick them under your pits?
Why was that the first thing? Why was it the first thing you thought of with Queen Latifah? Was he like,
"Oh, I know what they are." You guys, I know what they are. They're these wet pads, and you just wipe your pits and throw it away.
Oh, okay.
Like tucks for your armpit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, and this tucks. Is what you could put into your armpit if you were like gonna go climb a mountain, and sure, you're gonna wear, huh?
You're not gonna leave them in.
No, but
it's
a
pad.
But if you were gonna go, if you were gonna go out for 3 days straight and never change clothes, right? Like you're gonna go do something where you just sleep in what you're wearing and get up and keep going.
Yeah,
this is what you would put in your armpit.
Well, yeah, but I think you could do that.
I just use deodorant.
But should you? No, what I'm thinking is you would keep it in your backpack and you just pull it out as you need it. I think that's how it works.
It's possible, but it's not plausible.
Yeah, it's not plausible.
Okay, so they do. They stick like you. Yeah. Basically peel them and they stick in. So you do leave them on there.
Weird.
Yeah. Can I put one of these on my butt?
Can't be good.
Yes, Brian.
I'm just saying, if there's no chance of you showering and taking and disrobing is also a problem for several days straight, this is a good solution.
Yes. Trademark. All right. What's the...
Who hasn't showered since January is Adam Carolla. Ew. So I'm on an interview with Jimmy Kimmel. He hasn't showered since January.
Is that true? Yeah.
It's true. He's doing it to avoid getting sick because he's using it to build up his immune system.
Is he really doing that?
He's really doing it.
All right. We need to do more crazy podcaster ideas. Let's make it happen.
that's why he doesn't win podcast awards, people.
That's right. That's why we always win. All right. Here's something about jellyfish.
He's starting to stick to my faceplate.
Oh, yeah. The file I named it, Jellyfish Don't Like Rappers. That was the kind of mood I was in last night. All right, here's a great line, my favorite line in the movie.
We're 160 fathoms down, and now we've got a nutbag down here who can flip out and crack up.
There you go. I like it.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
Flipping out, cracking up nutbag.
Yeah. That was right from the Roosevelts, by the way. I captured that.
I mean, come on. If you're a bunch of dudes down deep in the ocean, that's what you want, a crazy lady, yep, right?
That's right. Here's your fake computer chatter.
What is it, a discharge from the buffer memory?
Yeah, what is it, a discharge from the buffer memory?
That's right.
Come on, man.
These numbers got to get out. The buffer memory has got to discharge.
Yeah, discharge it. All right,
must be one of the, that's a Duplater conundrum right there.
There you go. You guys ever play Space Team on the iPhone?
Yes, love Space Team.
It reminds me of that. I freaking love the techno babble in that game. Oh, we should play that next time we're all together. All right, this part made me laugh.
You must have messed up the translation.
No, I don't think so.
If this translation is right, this alien sounds like an idiot.
Well, that's something to consider, a stupid alien.
I like that whole exchange. I love the idea that just because his name is Jerry, he's a dumbass.
Jerry's a moron.
Yeah. All right. We are not alone.
We're not alone. We are definitely not alone.
Okay. Nice transition.
Thank God.
I know. You really put hammer it home. All right. Jerry getting mad.
What happens if Jerry gets mad?
Well, I don't know. Elaine! I don't know.
He's got big hands! Why is that so big?
Most annoying 7 seconds in the movie. Here you go. I made you do all 7 seconds. All of it.
I kept having to check my phone for an alarm.
Oh, do you have one? Do you have that on there for that? That sound?
I did for a while. That is one of the stock Apple alarm noises.
Oh, I've never chosen that one, I guess.
Yeah, don't.
Okay. Yeah, I don't like it. It bothers me. It's a 90s alarm.
Finding it right now here. Hold on a second.
You have it on the phone
it's
there?
It's exactly that. Yes.
Let's hear it.
It is.
Let's hear it.
Don't see.
Clicking, pushing, poking.
Yeah, I'm looking. Is it under, it's not a ringtone, is it?
It probably is. Aren't they all the same?
As opposed to a text tone or a.
Who knows?
Oh, here we go. Is this it?
Nope.
Oh, God.
Hold on a second. I got to wake up. I got to get up.
Everyone's waking up.
Here we go.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That thing.
It's under classic.
I will never put that on my alarm ever.
Oh shit. Now I got to change it. Oh, it's going to do that next
time. Yeah, you don't want that. All right. Here's some angry acting.
What are you going to do? Write me a prescription? Just get rid of me again? Well, it's not that convenient down here, Norman. Okay.
Ugh. It's not that good of acting either.
Angry.
If you ever wondered if Dustin Hoffman could scream, I can tell you he can. Do you think that's really him?
I totally think it's him. All I could think of was, "Hot water burn, baby."
Oh, right. He's like
same
Rain Man.
Scream in Rain Man. Sounds like E.T.
Oh, that's amazing. All right. Final clip. Norman, get to the lab.
Norman, can you meet me at the lab, please? I have something I need to show you.
Oh, man, that's an awesome voiceover thing.
I just found the echo filter on my microphone.
Get down here and see this. It's great. Your voice will sound real good.
This whole movie was an exercise. It felt like I was listening to a radio commercial where they like flip back and forth between, I'm talking on the phone, now I'm talking in real life. Mm-hmm. It just felt the whole thing, just a constant modulation of voices.
Yeah. Later, she sounded like this.
Good dog, poor day.
Just kidding. That didn't happen. That's a different movie altogether.
I'm glad you keep that one permanent.
Oh, it's a good one, man. It's a good one.
Yeah. It's like Hole in the Roof. It just never gets old.
Yeah. Except Hole in the Roof, which I haven't played in a long time. All right, here's this thing here, which is not here. Why is it? Oh, here it is. It's the film sack checklist. No Sharon Stone boobs? Check. Can't hear Dustin Hoffman for shit? Check. Not being able to hear Peter Coyote talk without picturing a bunch of Ken Burns documentaries? Check.
There's really a check mark for no Sharon Stone boobs?
Yeah, there is. I'm sorry. There's no boobs. I know. There's no boobs. Star Trek Connections this week, brought to you by Daryl Skills. June Westmore is a makeup artist. She is a member of the Westmore family, I guess, who worked on Star Trek The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Enterprise. And then for the Star Trek films, she is the sister-in-law to Michael Westmore. That name
sister-in-law. Wait a minute. Sister-in-law. Okay, so possibly Michael Westmore's sibling's wife?
Yes. Yes, that's what we believe to be true. And there's no other connections, which I find hard to believe. But then again, this is a very small cast.
What?
It's not a lot of people, right? Like, it's only, six people or something. And my brain tells me that, for some reason, I know it's wrong because I looked it up, but for some reason, my brain says that Sharon Stone was in something in Star Trek and she never was. So I don't know why. Oh, I probably
definitely looks like that here. She's got that.
You got the short
future look.
Yeah. And the short hair, like, what's her name that died in the plastic bag? Tasha Yar. She got Tasha Yar hair a little bit.
Yeah.
Good tart bit.
Soundtrack grade, I'd give it a, I don't know, I'd give it an O for okay. It was fine. We talked about it earlier, but it is fine. It's not that bad.
I've come to judge these soundtracks based, these scores based purely on whether at the end of the movie I want to listen to it ever again. Like, coming out of Captain America Civil War, I was like, I have to go buy this score. I love this score so much. And after watching Sphere even a couple times the last couple of weeks, I'm just like, couldn't care less.
Really?
With the score.
Yeah, and that's interesting because it's not like you haven't had some poopy movies, but the score stuck out. Like, I want to say The Saint. You couldn't stop raving about The Saint music.
Raving? I was a lunatic.
I agree.
I was a lunatic.
I agree. I still get angry tweets about that.
Oh,
about our dislike for The Saint.
I was hoping you were going to say, I still get angry at you about. Bring it all up again.
Yeah, way to go. We're kicking up old wounds. Here's this taste of that from that thing you just said. Here, let me skip ahead. Oh, whoops, that's not it. Hold on. We'll do the track called Civil War. Oh, yeah, listen to that. It's very civil and very war-y. Henry Jackman is the is the new Wolverine. No, he's the guy that made the music there. Definitely not the new Wolverine. Let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's begin with Randy.
Sphere.
How do you spell this? I wonder how you spell this on your Twitter.
How many characters is that?
Yeah, exactly.
Two.
Nicely
done. A couple
done.
Of dots.
Easy.
Brian Dunaway.
Sphere. This movie is like a double bird coming out of Sharon's scapula area and aimed directly at the book's face. Double back bird.
Her scapula area?
Yeah, she's kind of like, she put him up like wings.
Yeah.
You see her when she was walking out of the room? And
yeah, she gave him the double back flip.
Double back bird.
Yeah, I like those. I have a bush out in front of the house. I did an Instagram of this as well, but there's this bush in front of our house that looks like a bunch of middle fingers being flipped. It's the weirdest. It's the weirdest bush. You just feel like when you're walking past it that you should be completely offended by it.
Right. Damn you, bush.
Damn you, bush. Four more years.
I have to
All
do
right.
that with my bush.
Yeah. Oh, great. Your bush. It always looks like Randy's bush is flipping me off. How weird. All right. Let's go to Brian Ibbett.
Sphere. A group of scientists discover an otherworldly entity at the bottom of the ocean that gives them strange and amazing powers, and then they reluctantly agree to give up those powers. Or do they? Well, yes, they do. Or do they? They do.
How will they all fit in that tiny
cell? Or
stove?
Do they?
Oh, man. They I've been so they disappointed, do. Like, over and over just in your statement about how they gave them up and then didn't and then did and then didn't. All right. Well done,
it lets
everybody.
You know, lets you know how bad this movie is.
Go ahead. Say that again. Let you know what?
It lets you know how bad this movie is that we haven't once referred to the movie The Abyss. Like, that's how bad this is.
Oh, yeah. The Abyss is another one of those movies.
I thought about bringing it up when we were talking about The Bends, but that's about it.
Yeah. I'm in the mood for The Abyss. I wouldn't mind watching that.
I'm in the mood for The Bends.
Yeah. The Bends. All right. Oh, there's that sound. Look here.
Wait, aren't we missing a Twitter post?
No.
No.
No, y'all did.
Yeah. We usually do three.
There's only three of you.
We got three. We did three.
All right. So here's the alternate title. Just handed me in this envelope. Here, I'm going to. Okay, let's see. Let's check it out. I got more Foley going on this week. Alternate titles. First one they have here is Nick Fury is a deep sleeper, or how do you want your Liev Schreiber cooked? and then bonus one is Jerry's Game. That's a stupid idea. All right, moving on. Let's go to emails. How about this email from Daniel Pierce? Daniel Pierce. He was in the Korean War. Can't wait to get home. War as hell. All right. I know Dunaway is on board for this one. Childhood favorite here. Count my vote in. Also, fantastic. Oh, he says The Fantastic Four by Tim Story is up. No questions there. Keep racking the sack in, Daniel Pierce. Is that true? Is that up on Netflix?
The Fantastic Four is that seems so quick, doesn't it?
There's a lot of new good ones up on Netflix. Well, I've been kind of impressed with all the new stuff coming
out. The Tim Story one. No, it's the Tim Story one is the one with Chiklis and all those guys. So the 2005 one.
Which is my favorite.
Oh, it is. It is up. Yeah, I saw it on Netflix.
I don't like seeing Chris Evans in that. It bugs me to see him there. I don't know why.
Is he too small?
Well, he's just not Captain America yet, and it's just weird. He so defines Steve Rogers now that it's...
Yeah, but I want to sack it. That's a great movie.
Yeah, let's totally sack it.
Yeah, let's do it. I would like to do that.
Yeah, there it
and
is.
And I think I'll spring the $1.50 or $2 at a Red Box and watch the... And finally break down and watch the new one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
We should do $2. That. We should sack the new one.
I've seen the new one. The new one is we could totally sack it.
People hate that thing, dude. People hate it.
Yeah, right. I think it'd be kind of redundant, though, because, most of what we're going to talk about is how they didn't get the Fantastic Four right. And in both cases, we'll be talking about how they didn't get it right.
Listen,
again.
I hope that that their cancellation of a Fantastic Four 2 and non-extension of that, of maintaining that license, means that Marvel can get their hands back on that property.
Right.
There's a lot of talk that that's going to happen, so that'll be good.
The movie that went streaming this week that blew my mind at how new it is Minions. I don't understand.
Yes. Oh, really? Oh, cool. Excellent. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah. Netflix
not a bad movie.
I remember kind of wanting to see it after I saw the previews with them and all the historical people that they picked as their despicable leader.
Right. Have you guys seen a couple of things that's come out recently? Pleasantville, which I'm afraid to sack. Sandlot, which also afraid to sack. Turtles in Time, I am not afraid to sack.
No, that's totally sackable.
Is that the new one? No.
This is the third one of the original from 93.
I'd do that, yeah. I am afraid. Then, Sandlot, I don't know if we can do Sandlot.
No, I love Sandlot.
It's not that I don't love it. And then it's not that we don't sometimes do movies that we love. It's just, I don't know why that one doesn't scream that it fits to me for some reason.
Sandlot is the movie that I get the most crap for not have seen.
Oh, my.
Right.
Wow.
You should. That have you seen 16 Candles?
Yeah, I've seen 16 Candles.
For me, it's Blade Runner. And
Sandlot was filmed 10 minutes from here, by the way. Take that, oh, really? Everybody. Yeah, they filmed it right here.
Right next door in that place where they're doing construction.
That's right. Now there's a Denny's there. Sorry.
I don't understand exactly what makes a good film a good movie for film sack, except when it's a good movie and one or more of us comes away hating it, then for some reason film sack is a lot of fun.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The kind of heat Randy took for Blade Runner and the kind of heat I took, or all of us took, for Wet Hot American Summer. Like, those are, despite them being very controversial and people kind of flipping out on the comments, they're always some of our highest downloads. They're the ones we get the most emails about. Like, we you know, we're into that. And by the way, everyone calm down lately. Jeez, there's some, you know, this is what I would do. I would direct everybody to Brian Ibbett's or Brian Dunaway's comment on one of the recent ones. What was it, Brian? Anyway, you made this really great comment that really laid out what Film Sack is, and that was perfect.
It was about Contact, I think.
It was awesome. Yeah. So thanks for that. That was really good. I think you said in all the right number of words exactly how things are, and everyone should refer to that from here and forever. Okay, I got one more email from Jeff Sire. He's up there in Ontario, Canada. We may all know him. He's also known as Bronco. Big member of the community. He has a little bone to pick with Randy Deluxe. Here it is.
Oh, great.
Film Sack crew. Randy, I love you, man. You're awesome. But saying we have been tantalizingly close to Cold Fusion for years just because some whack jobs keep talking about it is the same as saying we are tantalizingly close to discovering Bigfoot because whack jobs won't stop talking about it. Love you, man. Jeff Sire.
That was exactly my point.
And then he followed up with, sorry.
P.S. Sorry, yeah. No, I think exactly he's talking about point. The Saint. You were on the Saint talking about the Cold Fusion thing,
that was exactly my point. Like, if a movie has someone who has found Bigfoot, like, that's a lot better than something I've never heard of that no one has ever, you know, talked about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's that's why I like that. I like that this movie was about something that we could all glom onto really quickly, and we didn't need a bunch of explanation in order just to understand what in the world they were talking about.
Yeah, it was because the way the conversation was going, I had said I hate that it was Cold Fusion because it just felt like such a dumb thing of the time. And,
yeah,
and you had said, well, it just requires so little exposition, and you make a good point about that. Because everybody gets it, right? It's like, oh, that'd be amazing. Cold Fusion. Done. There's your plot point. Move on, sort of thing. I get it. Anyway, thanks, Jeff, for your
help. And the thing you didn't say about Jeff is that he works in actual nuclear energy. And so he knows a thing or two.
He works at a plant and will sometimes post photos of this place. And it is this labyrinth of, like, complicated stratosphere equipment and him walking around in hard hats just looking like a badass. Like, it's super cool what he does. I'm surprised he's not glowing yellow and riding around on his motorcycle is all I'm saying about that, though. That's going to do it for emails. Thank you, emailers. That email address is filmsack@gmail.com. So please send more as you have more to say. Do we have a movie for next week? What is it? I don't even know. Hell is
too
it?
Too Fast, Too Furious.
No way. Yes. Sweet. That's the second one?
Yes, okay. Because we don't need to watch the first one because we all know what the first one's about. Yeah. We all get the first one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Second one is...
Fast, the and they are also and or Furious.
Yeah. Yes. I wish it was Tokyo Drift, but I'm okay with two. Two's fine.
We'll get there. We will get there, my friend.
All right.
We'll work our way towards Tokyo Drift.
I like Tokyo Drift is the third one, and I freaking love that one. That one's awesome.
And then after that, we've got... sorry, Randy, I'm kind of stepping on... You no, you should sure. do this.
No.
All right. After that, we've got Da Vinci Code, mm-hmm. The Mummy, E.T., Extraterrestrial. We get to hear more of Dustin Hoffman screaming, and Collateral Damage.
Oh,
and
sweet.
Newly added to the list, Teen Witch.
What?
Oh, I hope Teen Witch holds on. Don't go off streaming, Teen Witch.
Well, we could bump it up if we need to, but yeah.
We could bump it up.
I'm anxious to see if that is the big piece of shit that I assume that it is. So we'll get to that.
We've got to add the Village People movie with Steve Guttenberg and Bruce Jenner, too. We got to put that in there.
That's right. That's right.
Anyway. Teen Witch is one of those films where I'm like, okay, I heard about this a long time ago, and I know it exists, and I remember it existing, but then I go and look at it like, what's this about? It's got, I don't know any of these people. I don't know this director. I don't understand how this thing exists. I can't wait.
Well, all right. That seems like perfect fodder for us. That's next week, Too Fast, Too Furious, that witch thing in the future, and a bunch of other cool stuff. So come on back for all of that. Films. Oh, a note. On Monday, we put details up at frogpants.com/Warcraft for the live viewing of Warcraft on the 11th of June. All the information will be there, including ways to reserve tickets if you'd like to be there. Mostly locals is the presumption, but I know a lot of people are coming out of town, including Brian Ibbett and his wife, Tina. Possibly Randy Deluxe. Do we know Randy? We don't know yet.
We're not sure yet.
Okay, we're not sure. Maybe.
We're talking to Randy's employer about certain things.
Yeah. So that could be really cool. Tom Merritt will be there. A bunch of people you know and love will be there. And then, I'll be there. And my family will be there. And everybody will be there. And we'll watch this movie. And it'll be great. And we'll have some swag to throw out to people and some cool prizes and some other junk. So just come on down and check it out. We're renting a theater. There's going to be limited seating. I think 335 total seats. So I suspect these are going to go quick, and you're going to want to be on top of it. That's at frogpants.com/Warcraft.
I feel like we should all be tamping down expectations for the movie. Like this, you know, like the movie will have already been open in Europe for like 3 weeks at this point.
Yeah.
Like you know, don't hold off seeing it. If
yeah, don't, I mean? Don't like, kill yourselves. But if you want to, I mean, it opens here in the States on that Friday. The very next day is our yeah. thing. So if you're planning on seeing it that weekend, may as well make it with us. But if you're
sure.
If you're in Europe, by all means, but just don't tell us about it. We don't want to hear anything.
Yeah.
Okay. And we want to go in fresh, regardless of how great or terrible the movie is or where it is in the middle.
Put you on your 5-day sweat pads.
All right. Brilliant. Anyway,
I'm bringing a box of those.
Anyway, check that out. That's frogpants.com/Warcraft. And the website is filmsack.com for us. You can leave us voicemails. I have some of those queued up. We'll have those next week at 801-471-0462. Email us filmsack@gmail.com. On Twitter, we are at filmsack. Leave us reviews wherever you get your podcast. That always helps us in more ways than you know. That will do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time. Nothing?
Let's agree to forget.
Okay.
Yeah. We're
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.